Today on Doomed!
Reunited and it feels so good.
Yeah! That was a suggestion from a listener, Joanna, on Twitter just moments ago. Because today on the show, everyone, my pal slash arch nemesis, Michael Brooks of The Michael Brooks Show, which is what you mainly know him from, and then this other small little production known as The Majority Report. I'm going to pull him up live and introduce him on the show right now. Let's get him up on the screen so you could see. Here we are. Everyone, Michael Brooks.
Reunited, double LP world excited. But why, I can see for you it might be like great pal slash, like for me it's like, I don't know, great pal slash occasional irritant.
Ooh.
But I'm arch nemesis.
Right, well, I mean,
on
the Majority Report, we had a repertoire of going back and forth, which was purely, people may not know this, but that was purely for the show. It was like pro wrestling style.
That was literally purely for the show, and I actually was really funny when, like, people would be like, I think there's something going, like, those guys, you know, they hate each other.
Right.
And we would just be like, like joking around. That was pretty funny.
Right. Oh boy, Michael, your connection, man, is very poor. But that's okay. We'll make it through. We'll make it through.
Look. Give me a second, and I'll relocate.
Oh yeah.
The light won't be as good. Just give me. All right. I'll call you right back.
All right. Cool. Everyone, Michael's gonna take a break. I will remove
vamp for a second.
All right. Yep. Let me put up a. Yeah, we'll take a second here. I'll talk with you guys for a bit. And we'll do like a, I don't know. What do I got here? I'm not going to play any music because then I'll get copyright stricken. But Michael's relocating and everything will be great. Michael will sound better. Michael will look better because he'll be in poorer light. So you'll see him a lot less. All right, let's go to, people are losing their mind over a bit of news I want to say for the show, though. But, I was very happy to see Michael shout out that he's going to be on the show earlier today on The Majority Report. It was Renee on this, regular listener Renee over here on the YouTube live stream is saying Queen's Pride over Crooklyn. And I will shout that out. Because he's clearly talking about my location in Queens and Michael's location in Brooklyn. And I don't know what's going on over where Michael is living, where the Wi-Fi or the high-speed internet or broadband access isn't as good. Ah, here we go. He's calling me back. Let's see.
Yo.
Okay. Oh, my God. That's like a completely...
All right, we're good now?
I feel like I should just start the show over, but no, we're good. Everybody,
thanks.
Michael Brooks. The light is barely, I barely notice a difference. You look just as good.
You know what, dude? Literally, you know, it's kind of, I actually, I'm still, like, I'm in a new, I literally forgot another lamp in this room that I can turn on, so it's totally fine.
All right, cool. So before we get started here, I have to, for old time's sake, just crack open.
I have my herbal tea. It works.
So it's, you know, exactly for people who don't know, just listen to this show, which I doubt it, or just got into The Majority Report after I was far gone. Michael and I used to host pretty much every other Monday on The Majority Report, and we'd call it Matt and Mike Mondays, M&M Mondays. This is Matt and Michael, but it is not Monday. But, you know, I'm glad you're on the show today because I'm looking through... Well, I mean, we're going to have to figure out what to talk about because I'm looking through what happened in, you know, not even just this past week, just today. And, you know, I'm struggling to get excited. I mean, Roger Stone was arrested. Boring. The government shutdown ended and Trump basically, caved like a child. I mean, yawn. There's a coup
Got
going on.
box.
There's a coup going on in Venezuela, and I mean, if I was a cartoon character, you'd see the Z's coming out of my mouth. I mean, not much to talk about.
True.
But I think we should talk about. I do want to, you know, talk about the Roger Stone thing up front, because it just happened today, and we could you know, talk about it. Not too long, because I mean, everyone else was addicted to talking about it today. But Roger Stone is somebody I've talked about on this program before. You know, he is, I would say, mostly known to this generation probably as the InfoWars guy.
Right. Yeah.
He had a role to play in the Nixon campaign, I should say. His name appears in Watergate. He has a documentary about him on Netflix called Get Me Roger Stone. He was Donald Trump's first campaign manager, and in fact, for a long time was pushing Donald Trump to run for president. In fact, I was thinking, you know, if you want to talk about Roger Stone and his relationship to Trump, there really is nobody probably more loyal to Trump than Roger Stone. I feel like you should play, and he was there from the beginning. I feel like you should play that Roger, that Drake song in the background, like "Where the fuck were you all?" You know? Roger Stone, you know, when Kelly Conway came in, when Manafort came in, when Bannon came in, when all these motherfuckers came in, as Trump was already, you know, making his way to the top of the Republican primaries, Roger Stone was there way before telling him to run.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Mark Ames had a tweet today though saying, like, you know, Roger Stone has basically been some form of, like, you know, sleazebag sociopath who's, like, interfered in campaigns and done just abysmal shit for decades, and he was treated as like, oh, look at this, like, lovable weirdo, like, he's a Republican, but he's into swinging. Like, isn't that interesting? And it's, yeah, right. But it's like, you know, you go back to the 1980s, right? And that firm that Manafort and Stone co-founded, where they were like actually one of the biggest like press shops and lobbying firms in Reagan's, you know, America in the 80s and Reagan's Washington. And, you know, they lobbied for basically every single dictator, right-wing dictatorship, mass murdering regime you could imagine, from Latin America to Africa. And of course, the Reagan administration supported, you know, people like Joseph Savimba and who ran UNITA in Angola and buried people alive. There's that crazy shit. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but the thing that Jack Abramoff, when he was young, like in the 80s, he organized, like, the Global Summit, and I think they did it in Angola. It wasn't called the Global Summit, but it literally was like all of the right-wing groups that the Reagan administration was backing. So there was like a summit with Contras, Mujahideen, UNITA, and they were all like, it's wild. I mean, it was like Woodstock for fascists. And like Roger Stone. So, like, that's the thing that's kind of funny about Roger Stone to me, is it's like, on one hand, he's this hilarious character. Like, I even had a brief interaction with him once, which is like, I mean, it was nothing, but it was like, this guy, before he was banned on Twitter, for some reason, he followed me on Twitter. And I followed him back, obviously, just out of curiosity. But like,
oh, hell yeah, you followed him. Right. Like, it's Roger Stone.
Fucking Roger Stone. And, but I never interacted with him. And then one day, like, you remember, like, how during the primary, like, people like Kasich would be like, Donald Trump is Hitler. And they'd be like, oh, so if he gets the nomination, you're going to, like, not support him, right? Because he's like, whoa, I didn't say that. I just said he's Hitler. So I, like, tweeted some shit out, like, John Kasich says Donald Trump is Hitler but won't commit to not voting for him. And I immediately get a reply from Roger Stone, like, yeah, he's probably still high from all the drugs that he was dealing, like, back whenever. He's literally trying to, like, launder some of his, like, dirty tricks through me on Twitter. That's awesome. Like, he never, but I'm saying, like, it's kind of a joke, but it's kind of like not a joke. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, there's a part of me that looks at him the same way I look at Alex Jones. Like, here's a guy who I sort of like say, like, you know, with Alex Jones, I go, you know, that guy is an incredible broadcaster. It's too bad.
Oh, yeah.
It's too bad he chose to go down this path, because if he was doing sports, if he was doing even like your generic conservative type, you know, even like a Rush Limbaugh style, you know, he would be like, you know, that's a guy who knows how to like do what he does. He's really good at it. But unfortunately, he's got this great voice, this great on-air presence, and he uses it to spread Sandy Hook conspiracy theories. And right. to do terrible stuff like that, that ends up sending his followers out to harass these poor families who lost their children in a school shooting. So, okay. I mean, with Roger Stone, you look at him and you go, you know, this is a guy who you look at, he dresses goofy. He owns himself being this sort of dirty trickster, which, you know, really, all these political campaign people are dirty tricksters. And then here you have one guy who's just like owning it. So you sort of like, you know, he's telling it. You know, he's like telling you straight up who he is. There's something to respect a little bit about that, but then you find out just exactly what he's doing and who he's doing it for and the types of things he's pushing. You know, he gave Trump the idea for this whole wall from the get-go. Yep. I mean,
it's more like we should take Roger Stone as an opportunity to disrespect the rest of these people more, not like... like him more for admitting he's an asshole.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
It should just be like, yeah, he's a scumbag. Like all the rest of these people. It's just that he does a shtick. And I talked to somebody I know like on the other side who does strategy. And he was like, you know, Roger Stone was like a pretty normal Republican consultant. And then he chose to like create a shtick for himself because he basically would prefer to be an entertainer.
Someone you know on the other side, you said?
Like a Republican strategist.
Oh, you need to. You want to give a little "Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned" spiel, a la Joe Biden.
Oh, right. Yeah. I have Republicans that are friends. They're friends of mine. I mean, I love the guy. I never vote for him. Maybe that's the difference, right?
Right, right, right. Yeah. So yeah. You know, but that is interesting. That like you know, even you know, they know who Roger Stone is too. I mean, it's not. I mean, maybe not so
Everybody
much interesting, but telling,
Roger Stone.
Telling, right.
Everybody knows. It was pretty funny that they actually gave him like the whole SWAT team shit. That was like, whoa.
Right, right.
He really pissed somebody off.
Right. I love though the conservatives though that are all like, wow, sending a SWAT team for a 70-year-old. But like if they were like to send a SWAT team for like some like 16-year-old who got like swatted while playing on Twitch, they'd be like, well, the kid was probably doing something to deserve it, you know?
Or if it was just like a 70-year-old black fill in the blank.
Right, 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 yeah.
Like, it's dangerous. You gotta right. Right. I mean, it is, but that's another amazing thing about the moment is like, that puts people like you and me, I think, in a really uncomfortable position because it's like you have all of these, like, I said the other day on the show, because I was talking on my show, I was talking about Patrice Lumumba, you know, who's assassinated by the Belgians and the CIA. And I saw
right,
this.
Right. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah, you do. Matt, you used to have a Patrice Lumumba lunchbox. I remember. He looked like a WWE guy. He had like Lumumba glasses, but then he had a fucking toga on. It was called like Kinshasa man. But I just remember like this resistance tweet that was like, you know, if you're gonna come at the CIA, you best not miss. Like, look out, Mr. Trump. And you're like, the FBI, the CIA, like these groups are not your friend, you fucking idiot. And then on the other hand, the conservatives who like have all these conspiracy theories and all this nonsense, and they're like, it's like all of a sudden they're all concerned about how like the FBI jams people up and the brutality of the criminal justice system. It's just only as applied to like wealthy Republicans who are almost certainly criminals.
Right. Right.
Right. And so that's, it just is very frustrating.
Right. No, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh boy. Oh brother. So let's move on from Roger Stone actually. Because, because I would like to talk about Well, the government shutdown ended today. Let's move on to that. Oh, well, we should also, well, before we move on from Roger Stone, actually, we should mention that he's out on bail. And his little bail literally was, he just has to promise to pay $250,000 if he doesn't show up. He didn't have to put up any money up front.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
Right. You know, I'm sure a lot of, you know, black and Latino kids get that deal when they get, you know, when they get caught doing what, some sort of small, petty bullshit.
And yeah. Just even along the class
or,
structure.
Yeah.
Nobody, like, that's incredibly unusual. It's really weird. But, you know, I'm sure he's lawyered up.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I think Roger Stone actually probably does have a little bit of money. Though, who knows?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's got, I always thought he just lived in New York because the dude's always talked about living in New York, you know, and all of a sudden he's getting raided in, where was he? His neighbor is Ocho Cinco. Did you see that?
Really?
Yeah.
Ocho, I didn't see that.
Ocho Cinco tweeted out this morning that, whoa, I'm going for a jog and my neighbor Roger just got arrested by the FBI.
I knew he had a place in Florida, but I didn't know that. That's
right. So, you know, it pays to be a conservative talker. That's all. Oh, not talker. I mean, no, conservative, like, campaign guy.
Not even that many years ago, he was paid. I think he was, like, on retainer for something like at least 20 G's a month by just, like, the state Republican Party of New York. I mean, yeah, the dude's, and I'm sure he made millions in the 80s. So,
well, that's,
I mean,
sure,
and in 96, I mean, dude, this guy worked for Bob Dole. He worked for John McCain. Like, in a way, it's like it serves all these people's purposes to pretend it's like, oh, he's just this fucking wacky guy. But like everything else, it's like, no, dude, you are Trump. You are Alex Jones. That's the Republican Party. Like,
right.
Same shit.
Right. So let's move on to this government shutdown, because, you know, when I was going to have you on and I posted the show late last night, you know, I thought we'd still be in this thing because, in my view, I thought it was possible that Trump would end it before Tuesday. But I felt if it went past when the State of the Union was supposed to be, I didn't see when this guy would end it, because if he wasn't going to end it to give himself TV time, then what would he end it for?
Nothing.
Well,
nothing.
What was that?
Nothing. Totally unfair.
Right, right. Well, it turns out that, you know, apparently someone in the Discord on the Majority Report today, I was watching the show today, Michael.
Wait, I believe, excuse me, do you mean the TMBS Discord?
Oh, the TMBS Discord, but
there
during...
There's another Discord that I'm not familiar with.
The TMBS Discord, but during the Majority Report.
I'm being a dick, but I actually didn't even know. I was like, is there a whole other Discord? Like, wow.
Oh, right.
Well, there's a lot of, yeah.
Anyway, the Discord, in the Discord, someone pointed out that Sam had previously said that the shutdown would end once rich people couldn't fly anywhere. And it seems
right.
Like Sam was right. Because
yeah, I think that's a...
You know, and I saw some people actually attributing this to Nancy Pelosi stopping the State of the Union, which, as an aside, kudos to her for holding the line this whole time. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And then definitely. I saw people crediting it to Mueller for friggin' arresting Roger Stone, and I guess they believe that Trump just wanted some sort of press off of him and Stone. That's bullshit.
What?
Yeah, that's bullshit.
That's fucking dumb.
Yeah. The reason...
That's the dumbest take I've heard. Okay.
The reason, though, is because so many workers at LaGuardia Airport, air traffic control workers, were calling out sick that today LaGuardia announced that all flights out of LaGuardia were halted because there weren't enough people working there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, look. Props to Nancy Pelosi. I'm glad the Democrats didn't fold, like, all of that 100%. But, like, the bigger picture to me, because I feel like the only relevant lesson for us moving forward is, like, I mean, Americans should be striking a lot. And on one hand, like, look, I think it's, you got to be careful about what you advocate for and what you tell other people to do when you're not in a position that other people are in, for sure. So I want to be careful about this. But that being said, America should be going on strike constantly, right? Like, that is something to learn from the French. They get like the smallest whiff of some bullshit that the government is going to do, and they just take, we're back on the streets. And like, and so I think, though, that this does prove the case. Like, the LaGuardia was grounded. The air traffic controllers are like, I don't know. And then immediately the flight attendants are like, look, if the fucking like air traffic controller, like, no, we're not going to go up in the air and like risk our lives, if the people on the ground can't land us safely. Like, this is ridiculous. But I also think, like, those are the big picture things. But the other thing too is like, the Republicans in the Senate, some of them were just starting to fold, right? Like, you had people like, including, Cory Gardner of Colorado, like some of the ones that weren't like, the usual suspects that you'd think like, oh, okay, maybe like Susan Collins or whatever, or Lisa Murkowski. But I also think that like, that too should be a reminder, because essentially what they agreed to was what was on the table several weeks ago. Like, this was just a complete, total, unnecessary bullshit crisis. And then, and Mitch McConnell could have ended it at any time. So it's like another thing where it's like, of course, this is Trump's fault, but this is the Republicans' fault. The last thing too, I think that's important, is Corey Robin, I forget, but he tweeted out, which I liked. He said, look, like, this is the second time in a couple of months, like, the Republicans went for it. Like, they went all in on white nationalism in the midterms, and they lost. They lost the House by a historical margin. Trump went in all in on white nationalism for this fake crisis for the wall and the government shutdown, and the numbers were bad, and it failed. So, that's a good, like, that's another really positive signal.
Right. Right. No, that's absolutely right. And when you look at, when you look at when you look at the MAGA people's reaction to the government shutdown, to Trump ending the government shutdown, well, at least for 3 weeks now, it's hard to not look at this as a complete, like, just, Schadenfreude, like my God, how great is this that they're, the QAnon folks were going apeshit on their little QAnon boards. Ann Coulter said that something like George H.W. Bush is no longer the wimpiest president. Cernovich is apparently, according to Will Sommer of the Daily Beast, who is jumping into that Cernovich stream. He had to clarify for his followers multiple times that he wasn't crying on air, which of course is something you do when you're not crying.
I'm not crying right now.
Right, right. Of course you're not, Michael.
The fucking, what I think was funny, like, I forget, remember that meme that was like, it was Trump at a debate, like one of those moments where he was just like in peak form, like emasculating Jeb Bush or something. And he's just making that like dumb mean girl face that he makes and doing something with his hands like, what? And it just, and it's just like a flashing, and it just goes cock, 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 cock. And
right.
And now it's, but it's great, 'cause now it's like on him. And that was why too, like, the way he was just bloviating today, like at that press conference after he just took this huge L, was hysterical. But I think, like, honestly, though, this is another lesson in, yeah, he's crazy. Yeah, like, he's ridiculous. Yeah, it's a white nationalist administration. It's a white nationalist Republican Party. But they can pull the plug on him. Like, they won't usually, because – obviously, he's still the leader of the party and really popular overall at the base. But like, this shit could have been done. It would never happen because Mitch McConnell's scumbag. But Mitch McConnell literally could have just said like, nah, this is dumb. We're going to keep government going. So I just hope like people will spread the blame around. You know what I mean? Like, because like people will get, well, I mean, we already know people get too fixated on Trump.
Right. It's, well, even, I just gave credit to Nancy Pelosi about 5 minutes ago. But then I also have to say, come on, Nancy, when I see that that video of hers when she was speaking to like some group of what was it, like mayors or something? I don't know. But just a few days ago, she was saying how, you know, the good Republicans need to come back and take back their party or something, because we need a strong Republican, a real strong Republican party, not this Trump. Yeah, come on. Come on. That's not, this is the Republican Party. This is the Republican Party.
And what's so funny is it's like, even if you want to idolize, you know, the whatever, like, I don't know, Rockefeller Republican, like Republicans that have, don't exist and have been, I mean, a major force in the Republican Party since like at the 60s, it would be like, well, you know who, there are still politicians who are that. And that's like fucking Lincoln Chafee is like, and he's not a Republican anymore. And he's just, you know, just like a weird, nice guy in Rhode Island who likes the metric system. Like,
feel the chafe.
What?
Feel the chafe.
Feel the chafe. Exactly.
Right.
Like, that's what Nancy Pelosi is talking about. And that's not something that's going to be happening anytime in the next, like, anytime in our lifetimes.
Right. Maybe eventually the Republican Party will be utterly, completely annihilated, and Lincoln Chafee's time will come, and he will create that second party that you're just, the version of the Republican Party that you're talking about. But of course, it wouldn't be the Republican Party anymore.
No.
Right, but really,
it'd be like suburban Greens.
Suburban Greens, right. but the thing is, like, you know, the Republican Party has been like this for a very long time. Like, if anything, I thank Donald Trump for, obviously, I prefer him doing this while not sitting in the White House. But right. he tore the mask off. He grabbed a bullhorn instead of that dog whistle. He's basically unmasking the Republican Party for who they were and have been for I would say as long as I've been alive, at the very least.
Definitely. I mean, going back, I mean, the policies have changed, and like, definitely, like, obviously we all know that, like, oh yeah, when Nixon was president, he actually, you know, he did some decent things domestically because that was just where the politics were at. But I mean, the reality is like, going back to Barry Goldwater, who ran as a frigging, you know, was a far right segregationist. And then, you know, Richard Nixon ran the Southern strategy. We all know who Ronald Reagan is. Ronald Reagan was a far extreme right conservative. I mean, yeah, this is who they are.
Right.
I mean, that's it.
So the government's open for, is back, you know, the government's been opened up again for 3 weeks. What do you think's going to happen in 3 weeks? Because if Nancy Pelosi continues to hold her line and not give Trump that border wall, which I, you know, again, any progressive who was against Nancy Pelosi before, earlier, and my stance then was, name someone who is better equipped to do this right now, and I'll get behind them. Because the people who were saying they were going to challenge Nancy Pelosi were to her right. So, I mean, she was.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, of course, I'm not a Nancy Pelosi supporter, but
right,
it was,
of course,
like, no-brainer. Like, she was, of course, she was the best choice.
Right.
And she was also the best choice for stuff like this. Like, she does kind of know how to maneuver. But I think, I don't know, dude, because I feel like, one part, I mean, obviously, I think, you know, I don't, there's always reports that come out every couple of days, and I'm not really like, I don't understand the state of them right now, that, you know, he's trying to like go into the military. He's trying to do some form of this, like through an executive order, or, you know, reallocating funds from like the Army Corps of Engineers or something. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to do this through some type of executive power, which, you know, is a big problem. But on the other hand, I also don't think, like, I don't know, like, I just think, like, Trump is so full of shit, and it's so, like, you know, it all is about, like, winning a news cycle and dominating, and he just got so cucked that, like, I don't know, like, I feel like the next play is to, like, basically just go back to the original formula, which is, like, you know, the wall is being built. Mexico's paying for it. Just say that shit. Just fucking assert it. Because he can lie to his, that 30%, he can say literally anything to. He can just lie and lie and lie and lie and lie. And then, like, And then do the other side of the mouth, which is like, I'll tell you folks, like, they don't support me, and like Nancy Pelosi's having a menage a trois with the head of MS-13. And I just think, like, but I don't know. And so, like, I'm sure he'll double and triple and quadruple down on it, because that's like his core brand, right?
Right.
But I don't know if he really, I mean, look, obviously it's Trump. So Trump literally could next week be like, you know, got wind of the Ann Coulter tweet and feel too emasculated and feel like he needs to start the shutdown again, right? Like, I mean, he's a fucking lunatic. But at the same time, I also feel like he, to the extent he calculates it all, he doesn't like to, you know, look like a punk and he lose. And this was like, I mean, I didn't think it would work out well for him. And maybe it's also because we're just always used to Democrats being pussies, but it's like, it was amazing to watch. Like, oh, you just lost.
Right.
Like,
right.
Just straight. You just took an L. Like, he didn't even have like some type of like, well, and with the agreement for a joint commission on whatever the fuck. It was just like, nah, you got nothing.
Well,
fuck you.
Well, my
like Nancy Pelosi. So she rocked it. So I don't really, I guess it's like in 3 weeks, does he want to do the same shit again with even less patience and even more anger? And then there's zero incentive for Democrats not to fold on that. Like,
well, Michael,
I don't know.
Let's end this with my recommending that you read The Art of the Deal, because the answer is probably in there. I mean, this is probably how deals are made, right? I mean, this is like, you know, first you shut down the government, and then you lay all your cards out on the table. You put on your poker face. Your opponent puts out a royal flush, a full house. I don't know. I'm not a big poker player. Whatever the best hand you could possibly have. You fold, and then libs owned. That's simple. That's how it works out.
And then what you do is you go in the Rose Garden and you talk about MS-13. And then you ask.
That was incredible to watch. That was incredible to watch. He goes into the Rose Garden and he starts going like, let me tell you about the percentage of people coming in here. And like, it was some of the stuff was so specific, I feel like, too, if I'm remembering correctly. It was like, this is the number of specifically Guatemalans who were specifically on cocaine when murdering white women under the age of 25.
Here we go here. That's a 10% increase in El Salvadorans.
Right.
Who threw rocks at precious 27-year-old white women. That's a 10% increase.
And by the way, these stats come straight from my good friend, Roger Stone. Like, it's such, like, the stats are bullshit to begin with, obviously, but it's just amazing to hear him say this stuff. But Michael, I'm actually seeing in our chat here and on Twitter that
yes,
people really want us to talk about this, because I guess I hit the jackpot. And first, I must thank you for this jackpot win, because it is because of you I'm doing a Doomed live stream on a Friday night. I wanted to have you on the show. You couldn't come on yesterday. You came on today. I appreciate it. And it worked out great, because there's a breaking report that Bernie Sanders is prepared to jump into the race.
Yeah.
He's going to officially run for president.
Feel the burn.
Now let me just
motherfucker.
Let me just clarify. I don't think, from what I'm seeing, he has officially ran.
No,
he's officially running, but it seems like
he's gonna do it.
Yeah. I mean,
I gave Warren a couple of weeks to see if she could pull it together. But it looks like the fucking old veteran hitter is gonna have to do it all by himself again. What the fuck?
Now it's exciting for me. Because as you all know, my number one priority in life is to make sure we never have a woman president. And as an addendum to that,
I got into socialist politics and independent media for it's just, you know, it's just two basic core motivations. I want every single human being, not just in this country, but on Earth, to have high quality health care And I just never want a woman in executive leadership. I mean,
Right. And clearly, if
of
you
course not.
clearly if you want to stop women candidates from winning the Democratic primary, you go after you put all your support behind the number one guy, the only one who has zero establishment backing, the only one who is a democratic socialist, which means that establishment media will be nagging him about the socialist tagline there. He's clearly the one you jump behind if you want to head off.
You ever wonder to yourself, I mean, it doesn't really matter, but it's interesting. Like, because if Joe Biden ran in 2016 versus Hillary, I would have just stayed neutral. I mean, I'm sure I would have decided one day, like when I voted in New York, who I was going to vote for, but I wouldn't. And to be really blunt, I would have said for reasons that are right and really wrong, like basically a combination of the fact that Biden's a better politician just as like a performer and also sexism, he's probably a safer bet to be the nominee. That's definitely true. But like I wouldn't have been like I would have just totally been sitting back and just and probably frankly just like criticizing both of them super heavily.
Well,
And
that's
then I
the.
always wonder, I'm like, there's so many people that I could think of that I'm like, hey, you know what? If Biden ran against Hillary, they actually probably would have backed Biden. And but then like they have this weird fixation on Bernie and they accuse people of, supporting Bernie for all the wrong reasons. I don't know, man. I obviously, I mean, we'll see, but obviously I'm stoked for when AOC can run for president. I think, all of us will support her if that happens, unless something dramatic changes. But like, I'm just so over all this bullshit. It's like, look, Bernie Sanders, he's not perfect. I'm more left-wing than Bernie Sanders. But across the board, on Medicare for all, on a wealth tax, on things that also really matter to me, like, no other candidates talked about the imprisonment of Lula. No other candidates talked about the rise of fascism in Brazil. No one else is willing to have even the most modicum of interest in Palestinian well-being. And I think that like you're gonna need to say, look, I mean, I put a video out actually on my channel about, I think people have to be really smart about how they focus on Kamala Harris. And I think like it's really easy to acknowledge like that there's a lot that is appealing about our campaign. As I always say, like, who amongst us on some level wouldn't love to see a black woman kill Donald Trump metaphorically in 2020, right? Like that, just on a basic level of if Trump had to wake up and he lost to Kamala Harris and he was just like, oh God, that would be fucking awesome. That would be amazing. Although it'd also be amazing if he lost to Julian Castro because like a Mexican guy who kind of is a little cucky.
How fast can we build
Yeah.
that
Right. That would be awesome. But
wall?
like but like the bottom line is you're comparing like a incredibly harsh prosecutor with actually an incredibly disturbing record of everything from like imprisoning people on truancy charges. This Bazelon piece in the New York Times on her record is actually mortifying. And again, it's in the New York Times. And then a record in the Senate that is, I mean, look, it's corporate centrist, blah, 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 blah. And, the only other thing I put on the table is I really think like, it's a mistake. I think it's a mistake to make an electability argument because I think the way it's shaping up, probably any of these people could beat Trump right now. Like right now at this moment, any of these candidates I think would have a great chance of cleaning Donald Trump's clock. And of course, I'd vote for any of them over Donald Trump. But I think that the question you actually have to ask that is longer term, which is like, well, it isn't just Trump. And if you're thinking strategically, we face so many crises and such big problems. Do you want to follow the same pattern that we've been following, where like the most extreme, hateful, far-right, oligarchic Republicans, they take control, they push the country to a catastrophe. Then we elect a moderate Democrat who does a few good things, does some really bad things, and just tinkers around the edges. And then the Republicans exploit all of these conditions and lie and steal and cheat and become president again. So that's the, I think the bigger question is more like, literally, what do you actually want to have happen in those 4 years? And, you know, because we're really hitting critical breaking points on ecology, on the how we deal with the global balance of power, you know. And so to me, it's like the only person that in any type of systemic way scratches the surface of that is Bernie Sanders. It's true. And I get that some people have.
No, it's absolutely true, because just if you, even if you just listen, I know, you know, I heard that you were talking about Kamala Harris's record, which, you know, some parts of town, that's considered an attack, Michael. but
and let me can I just say really quickly, just to I just want to put a fine point on this. I have no doubt that some people, particularly obviously on the right, are going to attack Kamala Harris for racist, sexist, and every other reason.
Absolutely.
100%. And not only will I fight against that, I will point that out and have her back. And I'll give her props when she does something that's good. But conversely, like, not only is that a bullshit argument, talking about her record as an attack, it's actually, like, so essentialist and disrespectful. I view Kamala Harris as one of the most important figures in national politics and an incredibly formidable opponent, and I take her profoundly seriously, which is why I will take her record seriously and talk about her record. And if you have a problem with that, not only are you, you know, just ridiculous, you're actually disrespecting her, because she should be taken seriously, and any serious candidate, we interrogate and assess their record. And that goes for all of them.
Right.
And I'm going to pay more attention to Kamala Harris right now, because frankly, like, I think Christian Gillibrand ain't going anywhere.
She's not.
I think Cory Booker's not going anywhere.
He's not.
Right. And I think that Joe Biden might, but I think, you know, look, Joe Biden runs. I've already spent more time talking about Joe Biden than Kamala Harris. And also, you know, when people always freak out and have a conniption about the criticizing of Tulsi Gabbard, it's just a different set of people.
Whoa. It's you're not a fan of Tulsi?
No, I'm not a fan of Tulsi.
I know. You know, but, you know, listen, like,
I don't want Matt. I don't want a woman president.
Right. Exactly. Right. You know, it's
nothing to do with supporting, like, Hindu fascism.
Right. You know, but it is interesting to just look at how this is playing out, because you have all these names jumping in. And I just honestly think that Bernie Sanders is in his own lane. But I do think that in terms of, like, a general electorate, I know that's not the same people who vote in a primary, but there is some overlap. I think people who just aren't, like, as into the nitty-gritty of this stuff might be, you know, picking between Biden and Bernie, weirdly enough. So that's why I sort of look at Bernie as, like, a legitimate... I mean, I look at Biden as, like, a legitimate threat.
I mean, Biden, if Biden gets in there, I would say, you know, we got to totally kneecap Biden. And I mean, that's just, there's...
Literally.
List.
I want to see someone on the streets of Scranton with a bat. roaming around looking for Biden.
I mean, Joe Biden, you know, I mean, there's everything to talk about with Joe Biden. Bankruptcy bill, Iraq, Anita Hill. I mean, this guy has a terrible record. I would warn, it's like the same way I would warn certain people to be, like, thoughtful about Kamala Harris or any of these candidates. I think that some people, like, because we all know that Biden is terrible and he's corporate. I think, though, you shouldn't underestimate the fact that a lot of people really like Joe Biden. And he does have a certain charisma.
Well, the fake Joe Biden as made by The Onion drives a Camaro and is your crazy uncle. What's not to like about the Biden that doesn't exist, Michael?
I think he is that way to a lot of people. So I think there's actually nothing wrong with, you know, keeping it pretty focused on, like, the issues, right? Like, obviously, because of what we do, we'll make fun of people and have characters and shit. But, like, the bottom line is I would like to have some hope of dealing with the ecological crisis because of, like, you know, Matt's young child, as an example. Right. I would like to have some hope. I think it's, you know, it's obscene that not everybody has health care. It's an obscene that not everybody has housing. And Bernie, again, it's far from perfect, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, I think he's the only person who's going to get in the White House and tell, you know, like, we Lula needs to be freed now. We are not going to blindly support.
Can you give me that? Can you give me that, Michael? By the way, I need to hear that.
Well, he said what I loved in his foreign policy speech when he's just like, after the imprisonment of Lula de Salva.
You know, I've said this on
the highly questionable circumstances.
You know, I spoke about this with Parker Malloy from Media Matters on this show a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about the 2020 race where it was then, and you know, the thing I still don't see from any of these new faces that have jumped in, no one is centering policy. It's, you know, they put out these videos with like this, the Obama was good at this, but something was more authentic about Obama when he would say this. You'd felt like there was something to it when he went out there and was like, you know, yes, we can hope and change.
Well, no, I think, dude, I think that it's two things. I think it's that one, it's like the time historically is different. So
right,
even for Obama,
right,
it would be different.
Right.
But on the other hand, what I do find amazing, and I would say, like, you know, Kamala Harris has some charisma. She's likable. Christian Gillibrand doesn't really have any charisma. Cory Booker has, like, I think he's corny. But it's just amazing. It's like they're trying to run a play that's designed for, like, one of the best and most charismatic people in modern politics, period. You know, it's like, it's like if you're designing a play for a sports team and you got to play to your strengths. And it's like they're all running this Obama formula. But it's like, guys, the difference is that Obama is one of the most charismatic people on earth.
Right.
And you are not.
Right.
But so also, you should not be like designing a campaign built around the same parameters. Like, you know, it's like trying to do what Bill Clinton did, or, you know, it's just like some people really have like exceptional charisma. And like, again, I would say like Kamala Harris has a little bit of charisma. She's a likable person. She's, you know, whatever, but she ain't fucking Barack Obama. Like,
right.
She's not even in the same earth, you know, it's
right.
Like, it's just, so it's a,
but just all these,
it's a weird strategy.
All these like promo videos they put out, it's like you're listening to like Tony Robbins or some shit. It's like,
right.
It's like, I don't want to hear an inspirational speech where we can do better.
Tony
this Robbins. This is not the America that we should be. We can be better. You know, this.
Well, no. Kamala Harris's video, she literally, it's like democracy, justice, fairness. And she goes, these aren't just words. And it's like, they literally are just words in this video. Like, they're absolutely words going across the screen.
Right. And I also love the whole youth thing that's going on, where there's people who are out there going like, you know, Bernie Sanders is too old. He should step aside. It's time for a younger generation. You always see this coming from like baby boomers saying this.
Always.
Because it's like, it's so funny to me because it's, listen, look at who young people support. You're going to find that Bernie Sanders is he already in 2016 was the most popular young person candidate in modern history. You're going to see this same thing again. Mark my words, he will be the most popular young person candidate. So here's the thing.
Shit. Anybody who says he's too old that's all just cop shit. Like,
right.
That's just nerdy, concern trolling bullshit. Get the fuck out of here. Who cares?
Right, but
I'm not like, if you tweet at me, Bernie is too old, or, you know, actually, according to some dumb survey somebody did, you know, Gillibrand's to the left. Like, I'm going to start blocking people on Twitter because I'm not doing that shit.
Right.
That's
right.
Just fucking dumb.
Right.
I mean,
well,
like,
I am doing that shit because I enjoy it, but.
Oh, I know you do. Look, if you want to say, like, I'm already thinking, like, in my head, I would love to see Bernie Sanders and Stacey Abrams. I would love to see her as his running mate. Maybe Bernie Sanders and Ro Khanna. There's people who are definitely young and who are really good, who would be good VP candidates. Unfortunately, like, we got to just skip Generation X. Like, they are not good. Like, as big a problem as the – because it's like they're sandwiched in between. Like, the boomers sold out. but there's still some boomers, it's particularly older boomers like Bernie, who like have held on to certain values.
From like the hippie generation, right?
From like, but even Bernie almost feels like he's like from like the 40s or something. But yeah, like, but yes, right. The hippie generation, right. Right? And then like the millennials come up, and for a variety of reasons, we're like, no, like, fuck this. We don't like. We need to figure this stuff out. And Gen X was just like sandwiched in the middle, and like it, they're just. They don't even have, like, they didn't even sell out like the boomers, but they were still, like, too coddled and right-wing and Reagan era to even, like, think. And you could tell, like, you could see, like, these candidates, like, they still, like, they, I mean, obviously they're all trying to copy Obama, but, like, they're also trying to copy fucking Bill Clinton.
Right.
I mean, it's, like, amazing. It's, like, it really is literally, like, and I'm Kamala Harris, and that's why I'm seeking the 1992 nomination of the Democratic Party.
Well, you know, it's also to me, this is just from my perspective too, but I've thought about this too. Why it's, you know, when you look at what's going on here, you know, there were so many baby boomers in office, from a whole, like Bernie Sanders was able to run for office when he did and go through all the different, you know, political, positions he's been in, because back when he started running, you could be just like your average Joe and afford to run. And then as it continued
in Vermont.
Right, in Vermont, yeah. But, like, you know, as it's gone on, like, yeah, the Generation Xers who are in office aren't really that great, because they're all people who could afford to run. Like, we're just starting to get millennials who are like, screw it, I'm a leftist, I can't afford to do it, but I'm doing it anyway, like AOC, you know? And even she surprisingly saved up. You know, every time I hear conservatives going crazy about how she didn't save up enough, I hear that she saved up like $15,000, and I'm like, how the hell did she even do that? Like,
I don't know, like conservatives who it's like the only reason that we even know who they are is like they found some like bizarre old fucking like, you know, like the functional equivalent of like some guy in like the Silence of the Lambs movie with $1 billion to be like, oh, here's money to go harass college students. And then they're like on Twitter and just major public toxins because they were funded by some of the worst people on earth. And their big answer to AOC is like, oh, she doesn't have enough money.
Right, like, right, right.
Yeah, that's a real winning message, you fucking idiots.
Right. And, you know, yeah. To stick on 2020, I thought this was funny. I heard you guys talking about it during the show on the Majority Report today. Richard Ojeda bowed out of his race.
Jetta.
And listen, I thought him being in it was actually good because he was bringing up a lot of things that I thought were issues.
I thought it would have been cool to have him on the stage, yeah.
Right, but then I came across this Dave Weigel tweet, and it's almost like, you know, I don't know what to say about this. Richard Ojeda, apparently... resigned from his state Senate seat ten days ago to run for to you know, contract running for president, and the West Virginia governor replaced him with a much more conservative senator. And, you know, 10 days later, now he's just dropping out of the race. So he basically gave up that seat for nothing.
Yeah,
and it's almost like,
oh, that sucks.
It's almost like, dude, what are you doing? And I don't know. I felt like if we'd gotten this news and I was still working at the Majority Report, I feel like you and me would have immediately started brainstorming on a character. Because, you know, something like, I don't know, Own Goal Ojeda or something like that.
Like, God damn it, the governor tricked me again.
Like something like
that. You'd have to do some real dumb, so it'd be offensive to Southerners, but it would have to be just like, I was going to run for president. Like it would have to be like, the fucking, like, governor's, like, the wily evil guy. And he's just like, you know, Richard, you and I disagree, but I think your voice ought to be national. You ought to drop out of state senate and run for president. No, just like, think so, sir. And he's just like, God damn it, boy, you get on that stage. And then, like, 2 weeks later, he's like, the goddamn governor tricked me again.
I was thinking more like a character. That is very funny. But I was thinking more of a character that's like, he comes out and says something extremely leftist and then goes... this complete 180 in the next sentence, something like, I don't know, like, the Venezuela coup is completely wrong. To stop it, we must take out Maduro. You know, like...
Or to resolve the situation in Caracas, I'm going to fly on a Boeing and put a goddamn bullet in Nicolas Maduro's head. And then we can have a negotiated transition. Go Rangers. Simplify.
Right, right. Simplify. No, but listen. What's that?
I got to go in a minute.
All right. Well, let's quickly, really fast, your thoughts on the what's going on in Venezuela.
Well, it's definitely a coup. Mike Pompeo just appointed Elliot Abrams to help be an administration point person on this. Elliot Abrams got his start in the 80s, helping Reagan support death squads and dirty wars in Latin America. Like, they're not hiding it. Look, in the bigger picture, I think Chavez is a really admirable leader, and I think the Bolivarian Revolution has done some amazing things, and I think they've also had some big failings, and there's legitimate criticisms. But at this point, it's like, when your country, when the United States is involved in a coup, the first thing is to oppose and object to that. And the other thing that's depressing and doesn't make me happy at all, but it's like, the problems in Venezuela of drug cartel connections to the army, of corruption, of inequality, the opposition is going to do the same shit, except get rid of the little tiny vestiges of the accomplishments of the Bolivarian movement. So I think, like, you know, I don't know, I was maybe too polite to her, but we had some idiot calling the Majority Report today who, like, I don't even know, honestly, like, I don't, you know, Sam goes here a little bit more than I do, but I'm not even like, I'm literally not even convinced she's even Venezuelan. Although
she kept saying y'all with a real Southern twang.
Yes. I think y'all missed it. It's an endogenous movement. It's an endogenous. And then she's like, yeah, the United States has nothing to do with it. And I was like, well, what about what Mexico is advocating in terms of negotiated settlement? Oh, they have a conflict of interest. I was like, oh, you mean like every other fucking country in the world? Like, saying somebody has a conflict of interest in international relations is like more dumb than saying the sky is blue. Like, international relations is literally dealing with everybody's conflict of interest. But anyways, and then she listed a bunch of like right wing.
The Constitution thing. I've seen the Constitution thing on Twitter, which is bizarre to me. People keep claiming that, you know, it's written in the Venezuelan Constitution that you could do this. Let me tell you that if there was a part in the Constitution that said someone could just stand up and say, I'm the president now, we would have had a new Venezuelan president probably every other minute of every other day. I mean,
as I say, and a lot of people like around fucking Penn Station would be president of the United States. And let me just say, and I would prefer all of them to Trump. And let me, yeah, like, right. I recognize Lula as president of Brazil. I recognize myself as president of the United States.
Not like Bernie. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, Bernie. Whatever.
You could be mayor of New York.
I'll take it.
You could be borough president of Brooklyn. How about that? Sam is officially the head of the Libertarian Party.
I'll take mayor. I would kill that Amazon deal.
Right.
Look, I think no. So I just think, like, the bottom line is, though, a coup in Latin America, and there was, you know, they tried a coup in 2002. Another thing that's it was put back. I mean, Chavez was literally saved from prison by a popular uprising, and the people that the Bush administration backed had to flee the country. And it's actually amazing to me, because honestly, just like as like, you know, straight up political analysis, like, a lot of people hate Maduro and a lot of people are really unsatisfied with the government, and still they're holding into place. Like, there is not an appetite for the opposition. And I will say, like, you know, don't trust, like, definitely don't trust upper class, like.
Uh-oh, Michael just froze. Maybe this is his way to get out of it. Uh-oh. Well, we could leave it there if it comes down to it. If he doesn't pop back up on the screen in a minute. His... All right, well, Michael just contacted me via text message to let me know that his battery just died on his computer. So we were going to end it there anyway. It's too bad. But, you know, it wasn't much more. I think, you know, I think he's absolutely right. Don't trust. Let's hang up the call. Don't trust those people. And that was Michael Brooks of The Michael Brooks Show and of The Majority Report. You can support him over at his very successful Patreon page at patreon.com/MATTBINDER. Once again, support Michael Brooks at his very, very successful Patreon page, patreon.com/MATTBINDER. Also follow him on Twitter at _MichaelBrooks. All right, let's continue. great planning, Michael, says Brett. Let's continue on into the... oh, wait, he's calling me back. One second. Yo. Oh, his volume is off. Unbelievable. Michael, your volume is off. Incredible. Incredible. Michael's making life really simple for me. Oh, my God. It's all right, buddy. It's all right. I'm telling him that it's all good. I can't hear him. That's really funny. All right. Abby says, you sound jelly. Oh, no. Oh, my God. He's calling me back again. Hello? 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 All right. Forget it. All right. Anyway, yeah, Abby said, you sound jelly. I'm just busting Michael's chops. I wanted to say that when he was on the show so I could have got his reaction. But, oh well. You could actually support Michael Brooks at patreon.com/TMBS. That's patreon.com/TMBS. Michael says, no idea what's happening. Tell everyone good night and hashtag feel the burn. Right. So let me go to my... we're going to go to the members half of the show now. But first, I'm going to thank my wonderful Patreon subscribers. I'm going to run down the people who make this show possible. Adam Q, Alan B, that's my dad, Alan Binder. He pays for the show, that's right. Andrew C, Andrew H, Benji A, Bobby M, Brett R, Brian James D, Brooke H, Christine H, Clement C, Colin R, Dank Uger, Dave K, Dragon Slayer 19, Edward N, Fraz K, Francis Z, Ian Curtis J, Jameson Test, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeff K, Josh C, Julie, Katie S, Louis from Texas, Marcos R, Max W, me. Once again, that is not me. I don't pay for my own show. That is a user by the name of me. Michael J, Michael M, Misfit D, Mr. Danks, Mugrim, Nicole A, Nam Danette, Omid M, Robert B, Romina O, Cena. I'm assuming it's John Cena. TM, Tammy G, Thaddeus A, Tom G, Tom M, Trine E, Will P, and Zarin. All right, folks. You can support this show by going to patreon.com/MattBinder if you didn't already get the hint when I was fake promoting Michael's Patreon page. You can also support the show by subscribing on the iTunes channel. Oh, the iTunes channel. I guess you could say that, but that's not really what they call it. Subscribe on iTunes. Leave a review on iTunes. Someone leave a review on iTunes soon, because I believe we have a review for literally every month this show has been active. It's been over a year now. Multiple reviews every month. But for some reason, no one's left a review yet in 2019. What's going on? I see the viewership and the listenership rising. But I don't see new reviews coming in. Russian bots, perhaps, listening to this show? Who knows? Subscribe to this YouTube channel. Please, subscribe to the YouTube channel. You're right here if you're watching on YouTube. If you're not right here because you're listening to the podcast, which, actually most people do listen to the podcast, doomed.tv will take you right to the YouTube channel. Subscribe. It's a work in progress, but I've just been informed by YouTube that I have the amount of hours watched, thanks to all you live watchers who sit through these two and a half hour shows sometimes, for the whole thing. I have over, well above the 4,000 hours needed, watched, needed to be approved for monetization, but I don't have enough subscribers yet. Very close, though. Just like a couple of dozen away. Jump on board. Subscribe. Get me over that that hill. All right. If you're watching on YouTube, stay right here. You can continue watching. But if you're listening to the podcast and you're not watching live, this is where I bid you farewell. See you all next time on Doomed.